all. This weekend, I'm releasing two episodes, so double the magic, double the miracles. In this episode, I talk with Catherine Chadwick, who created The Art of Self-Craftsmanship, and who also experienced a healing that was so unexpected and so profound, her doctors were mystified as to what exactly happened. Catherine is a certified transformational coach, and what I love about all these conversations with so many different people is that there is a wealth of options when it comes to us wanting to change and transform our lives. Whether it's through therapy, bodywork, hiring a coach, there are so many options out there to rise up and out of our humdrum lives and create lives full of magic. Catherine's website will be in the episode show notes, so be sure to check it out. But I was really enchanted by the fact that at one time, she was hired to go through people's refrigerators and then counsel them about buying healthier food. I gulped when I heard that and thought about my fridge, which does have some questionable items in it. And then I got to thinking, why do I keep resisting that food is medicine? Hippocrates said, "Let food be thy medicine, and medicine be thy food." But Oscar Wilde said, "The only way to get rid of a temptation is to yield to it." And while I love Oscar Wilde, Hippocrates does have a point. With record levels of obesities and diabetes, we must begin to consider food as medicine, because our very lives depend on it. Somewhere in the middle, there must be a gracious balance between Hippocrates and Oscar Wilde, and I trust that each and every one of us will eventually find it. So now, my conversation with refrigerator inspector Catherine Chadwick.
By the time I was 23, I was the charge nurse of a small intensive care unit. And by the time I was 25, I was in a hip to breast back brace. My lumbar back had crumbled. L4 vertebrae had crumbled. It was a series of stress fractures. It was all in pieces. I couldn't use my left leg very much. I was walking with a walker.
My second question always is, did you grow up in a religious household, or what did that look like for you? And did it inform how you later moved in the world?
That's an interesting question. And I would say, you know, we always said grace before a meal. We typically went to church on Sundays, and I didn't really like it much. It was a small congregational church. You know, we would get dressed up a little bit and go to church. And it seems like the minister was always angry. And I'm like, I don't know what this is about. You know, it doesn't feel good to me. And then we would leave and go outside. And it was always so a relief to get back outside, right? And so... And then people kind of went off in their little cliques, and it didn't resonate with me. I didn't like it. It wasn't something I wanted to really move forward with. And when I was 8, my father sold the farm and we moved. And my mom wanted me to join the youth group at a church that they had joined there. And I really was very resistant to it. I didn't want to be part of it. I was very much into playing sports. And that was my thing. But I said, okay, I will go and I'll check it out. And so I did go. And the woman that was leading the youth group started talking about sex education and using frogs as an example. And I'm like, oh, no. No. I went home and I said, all right, that's it. I am so done with this, right? So that got to be a real contest of wills for the about the next year. We're leaving for church. I'm not going. We're leaving for church. I'm not going. And it was really a point of contention. And when I went to college, what was interesting is that a phys ed class and a religious class, a religion class, were both requirements as part of my curriculum. And I had gone to Alfred University, which at that time was the number one college for nursing in New York State, which is why I was there. And I waited until last semester, senior year, to take this requirement. And it was a fabulous course that was taught by a retired Episcopalian minister. I believe he was in his 70s at the time. And it was the history of religion, which was fascinating. And I believe that religion, all religions are interpretations of the universal energy from different perspectives. And, you know, and there's an element of commonality in many of them. And I just found that to be highly interesting. And I believe absolutely in the universal energy. We don't breathe ourselves. We don't make our hearts beat on our own. You know, we're all breathing in this universal energy. So let's learn how to work with it. And what you want to call it, that's totally up to you.
Yes, I love that answer. I also love the image of you as a kid just being so staunch and saying no, and just holding your ground and standing firm and saying, hey, no. I mean, I was thinking when you were telling that story that I'm sure living on the farm, you'd seen plenty of frogs and what they were capable of. And so you're like, do we really need to talk about this? Is this like really a thing? And but that's really a precious and funny story. I mean, I wasn't introduced to frogs until high school when we had to dissect them, or maybe it was toads. And I hated that class so much because I thought it was so useless and needless to kill all these animals for no reason.
Right. Because
what was the point? And who was going to remember this in a year anyway? Mm-hmm. But it was like some sort of weird complex of like this company just killing these animals and mailing them to schools all over the place. So morbid. I just think about all these things in my childhood that were so strange and demented and morbid. But as I said earlier, it was the 80s. So there was a lot that was kind of strange, including Aquanet for our hair. But, you know, I don't know if schools still do that, but it does seem kind of useless and needless to just kill again all these animals. Sorry for going a little dark there, but.
Oh, that's all right. But the beauty of it now is that with the technology and the ability to create, you know, 3D things out of almost anything, and the models that can be used now for anatomy and physiology and learning, you know, the different aspects of things, particularly the anatomy, and you can take things apart and see how they fit together. It's a huge improvement.
Absolutely. I mean, I was at the dentist getting years ago, getting a crown, and, you know, I had to wait 2 weeks for them to make it. And I said to them, isn't it going to be amazing when you can just have a 3D printer here and you can print it while the patient's here and then just put it in? And the dentist agreed with me and said, absolutely. You know, that's going to be a game changer for everybody. Mm-hmm. No longer will we have to wait weeks, you know, in pain while whatever goes on. So there is a huge capacity for good stuff in this world with 3D printing. So I love that. I love that you just inserted that in. That was amazing. Well, I would love to talk about, you know, your work, and you have a podcast, and I'd love to just get an overview of what you're doing now in the world.
Well, what's interesting is by the time I was 23, I was the charge nurse of a small intensive care unit. And by the time I was 25, I was in a hip to breast back brace. My lumbar back had crumbled. L4 vertebrae had crumbled. It was a series of stress fractures. It was all in pieces. I couldn't use my left leg very much. I was walking with a walker. And what's fascinating is I had a beautiful repair at the Mayo Clinic. And my prescription was to wear this brace for a year and to walk at least 1 mile a day for a year. And at that time, I was probably about 30 pounds less than you see me now. It was a very stressful existence. And that's kind of what it was, an existence. And I was back in Florida. I was sleeping on a friend's couch. I had lost everything because I hadn't been able to work. I lost my apartment, my car, everything. And I'm sleeping on a friend's couch. And I had two back braces, a couple of bikinis, and I didn't care what I looked like. I went to the beach every day, and I got up to 6 or 7, 8 miles a day. And it was fascinating. And it was a real turning point for me, which really informed most of the rest of what I've been studying and working on since then, because I could see where people coming into the unit had not been taking very good care of themselves for whatever reasons. Either they didn't know how, they didn't understand the implications of their lifestyle, they didn't understand what their diet, they didn't so much they did not understand. And here I am in the same boat. I've been working myself right into the ground. Every piece of equipment was way too heavy. And I was doing what I thought I was supposed to be doing, you know, rah, rah, work those extra shifts, work all those hours, you know, work yourself into the ground. And I'm like, oh my gosh, this is absolutely no way to live. And I started listening to Wayne Dyer and Eckhart Tolle on cassette tapes and learning body-mind connection, which led to the body-mind-spirit connection. And I've been studying that pretty much ever since. And that informs how I work with people. And it's not what's good for me, it's what's good for you, right? You know, how can I help you embody and incorporate the tools, the wherewithal, the skills to help your self-development? Because the more self-sufficient we are on the physical plane, being connected with the physical energy, the universal energy, the energy principles, it's all in quantum physics, and all of this is it's all connected. And the more we understand that, the more fun everything is.
Thank you so much for listening and spending time with my guest and I this week. I am very grateful for each and every one of you, and thank you to Catherine for coming on the show. There will be a link to Catherine's website as well as to her Instagram, Catherine Chadwick Consulting. She's such a dynamic, gracious, and compassionate person, and she's changing the world one human being at a time. Meredith Moletti, in Aftertaste, a novel in 5 courses, said, "As a cook, I generally believe that you can tell a lot about people by what they keep in their refrigerators, what comforts them, what they need to have on hand to sustain them. Bon Appetit magazine publishes an interview with a different famous person each month, and often the interviewer will ask the celebrity to name 3 things that can always be found in his or her refrigerator. The answers are generally too finely crafted to be believable. A bottle of Stoli, fresh raspberries and beluga caviar, or San Pellegrino, fresh figs and key limes. And really, are we the kind of people that keep those kinds of things in our fridges?
My answer would be brown rice tortillas, soup, and this delicious turmeric juice I make with a little ginger and coconut water. Boring, but also healthy. So now you're thinking, I know a little bit more about Kirsten than I probably want to. So this is the perfect time for me to say, thank you for listening, and here's my one request. Be like Catherine, and remember that food is medicine. And each and every time you create a meal, do it mindfully and with love, knowing that every single bite will taste that much better. See you tomorrow for the very next episode of the podcast. And until then, I hope your lives are filled with very clean refrigerators, delicious meals, and good friends to break bread with.